This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, it's Friday! Listen to us. Yo, what's going on with your microphone?
Can you
hear me? Oh, no. Oh, Jesus, here we go again. Already technical problems at like 6:06 in the morning. Now we're playing musical chairs because Ben shifts to the right, Sia shifts to the right, and the end shifts to the right. This is hilarious. I wish I'd filmed that. It does. It looks like musical chairs.
It's such fun.
It's such fun.
Here I am.
Here I am, and how do you do? Good morning. It's, you know what? The beautiful sky this morning, shepherd's delight.
No. What type of sky was it?
It was...
it red?
Last night there was one hell of a storm again.
Yeah, but when it's red sky in the morning, it means someone's caught the shepherd in his delight.
Oh, that's right.
See, and that's the warning.
That's why I ask.
Yeah. Oh. He gets the warning.
They caught him mid-delight.
And if he does it again, well...
All right, good morning, everybody. It is Friday. I hope you're off to a good start. Hope your week is going well. What's happening? Is everybody settled in?
We're adjusting chairs and
I remember how much I hate sitting here.
Mm. Yeah, Ben's sitting in the corner where you used to sit for a long time.
The naughty corner.
Yeah.
You know how Ben likes that low, low chair?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to adjust this.
What happened with this microphone? Mm.
Yeah, someone must have spat on it or something.
Oh, that's what I thought we want first thing on a Friday morning.
So I've got a friend. They went to the doctor, and the doctor said to them, "Oh, because they had some like eye thing, like an eye infection going on."
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting.
The doctor said, "What you've got? Listen to this. If you want to know what's disgusting, wait till you hear why." The doctor says, "The thing you've got is a disease that happens when you take a shit, but you don't wash your hands properly."
Oh.
And you get fecal matter in your eye.
Oh, but you don't tell people that. You just say you've got
pink eye.
Illness.
Yeah, this guy has no shame, so he didn't mind telling me. But how's that, huh? So the doctor said you've got wash your hands.
I don't understand.
Where do your friends live? Like Rosettenville?
No.
My hands actually itch and feel uncomfortable if I don't. Ben.
Can you imagine?
Gareth, going to like the Rosettenville for drinks.
No. Just imagine. I mean, this person has no shame at all.
He didn't wash his hands after he pooped.
Mm. Is that not an ingrained behavior once you get past the age of 12?
Yeah, exactly. You would think.
Well, I'm flushing after you poop.
Yeah.
It's got to come together.
You know, it's like they say, this bread and butter. You get certain things that just go together, like shit and flush and wash. It's not like, well, I've just dropped a load. I'm going to go see what's on TV.
You know, I've never, ever taken a shit and not washed my hands properly.
No.
How do you do that?
But it's part of the thing. It's like when you make a car, you put the steering wheel on. You don't just...
Yeah, it's important. Like, I use a special toothbrush to clean my other toothbrush.
Oh, right.
Not the head, but where all the gunk kind of... Because I've got an electronic one.
Yes.
So where the gunk kind of builds up, I use another toothbrush to
clean
brush
it out.
Yeah. This morning, I put toothpaste onto the cleaning toothbrush. It was close.
You almost put it in your mouth?
Ooh, almost. But that is huge to me. I mean, imagine this eye thing. Poo to eye.
Poo to eye would be very bad. Poo to eye, that's what it's called,
poo
actually.
Poo to eye disease.
Yeah, yeah, someone looked it up, and that is the actual name of the disease. It's poo to eye.
Look at you, Dr. Mole.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another Dr. Mole. He's already taken the name.
What's he up to?
I don't know.
You know, if you
He's
think
my
you're washing
ex-husband's
his hands.
Cousin.
Hey, listen, if we go back 10 years, because we're doing this 10-year challenge all this week on the internet, and everybody's super excited about that. By the way, there have been some hilarious memes. Hilarious memes.
Yeah.
And some of the best I've seen. One friend of mine put up a picture of himself now as 2019. And then they had George Clooney as their 2008 picture.
Oh,
2009. It's hilarious. And then you're all those ones of like the child and, you know, the child is now, but then the kid is, obviously 10 years ago, the kid is just...
Bill Cosby's balls.
Oh.
something like that. There's the one with the balls, where the balls are hanging quite tight, and then the balls are hanging quite long for 29.
Delightful. Snoop Dogg tweeted a meme of no one gives a shit about your age pics.
Yeah.
That's where I disagree. You get these people who are like, I don't care what you look like. Well, yeah, everyone does it, so it's interesting.
I think it is.
Or would you prefer a picture of, look at the sunset I've just seen?
Yeah, wow. So
people are so up their own arse. It's ridiculous.
As part of this 10-year challenge, I was thinking, who are the people who were famous and important 10 years ago who've totally disappeared? They might be Uber drivers now, for all we know. You know, like famous people who've, who've just gone into the... Because I always thought it was really interesting that someone like...
Cameron Diaz.
Well, Norm Sanene used to be a huge hit like 20 years ago, right? And then 10 years ago, she was an estate agent.
Yes.
She was selling your house.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes, yeah.
In Killarney.
Yeah.
She still does
I think she still does that. She's an estate agent. Someone told me there's this famous guy. He was in the first season of American Idol in America. Ryan Seacrest had a co-host, a guy called Brian Dunkelman.
Yes. Yeah,
you know what he's doing now?
Oh, sorry.
Uber driver.
I'm not laughing.
No, he's an Uber driver. So you could get in the car and go like, I need to go to, you know, it's on the app. There's the address. Guy goes, hi. You go, aren't you the dude who hosted American Idol in the first year?
Wow.
Yeah, he could be your Uber driver. Because it suddenly occurred to me, like people who we thought were hugely famous 10 years ago, where are they now?
Well, Misha Barton.
Misha
Barton.
Got to obviously mention her.
What happened to her?
Everything.
Downward spiral.
That's a poor girl. You could basically, in fact, if you phone up, there's a hotline. If you phone it and you're willing to pay like $10, you can get a personalized Misha Barton greeting, a video call even. That's how bad life is for her.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, she's actually, as of the last we heard of Misha Barton, she's actually joining The Hills reboot.
What?
So it was The Hills. It's a reboot of the show The Hills.
Oh, Hills of Eyes.
Okay. I suddenly thought you mean the dog food Hills. Okay. I thought she was like the spokesperson for the dog food. I was like, well, she's done all right then.
She's got a great bark.
Yeah. So 10 years, it's been 10 years since she was on The OC.
Hmm.
You know, I guess in the States as well, because they have a bigger economy and a bigger market, you could have celebs who are out of the spotlight but still are living comfortably. Because they have, you know, they had millions there and they can still support themselves.
What people don't...
In South Africa, it's a bit sad.
People don't know. Well, it's also sad in America because a lot of the actors, they'll do one big movie, right? And that'll pay them maybe $4 or $5 million. But they invest badly, and then they end up...
Yeah, like in a nightclub or a smoothie joint.
Right, exactly. And then they end up having to work, like because they're not getting the movie roles anymore. Maybe they were put into a very stereotypical role, and that's all people can think of with them. And then they go backwards, and they don't have savings. They invested badly, and they've got no money. Then they have to take up a job. Maybe they're a construction worker or an Uber driver. Not that there's anything shameful about having a normal job, but if you were famous before and someone expects you to maintain a certain level of, you know, kind of social worth, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, many things will feel below you.
Like you mentioned Dr. Moll. Now, clearly, I mean, Dr. Michael Moll, who was a presenter at Top Billing, and your people in South Africa think that Top Billing is when you've really, that's when you've peaked.
Mm.
A lot of people think that.
Wank.
Well, sure, but a lot of people reckon that that's an important job. I mean, you and I both know, Leanne, that they pay absolute shit for that job, and it's really kind of embarrassing, and it takes up a lot of time, and it's a huge time.
And it hurts your arm muscles, too.
To have to point and gesture.
Yeah, it's a lot of big, wide arm movements.
Yes.
And they really don't pay well. I mean, I once went to Los Angeles. I paid my own ticket. No, well, I can't remember what it was, but I think I paid my own ticket there, and I'd organized accommodation and everything. And then Top Billing heard I was there, and they're like, oh, can you do these junkets for us? So I thought, all right, yeah, I'll do these. I had to interview Snoop Dogg and Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller and... Who else? There was some other. Oh, yeah. Viggo Mortensen and Omar Sharif and a bunch of people. It was like three movies they asked me to do. So I thought, oh, this is going to be a good payday because I'd never done any work for them before.
Such a greedy pricker.
They,
this can be a good payday.
Well, yeah,
who gets to meet these people ever? No one.
No. Look, I accepted.
And there's Cliff looking for dollars.
I didn't know what I was going to get paid until I got back to South Africa. So I just thought, well, great, I'll interview these people. It'll be fun anyway. And if I get paid, you know, good money for this, that's fantastic. Well, I did the interviews. It was really good. It all went well. They could use all the material because you only have, what, 5 minutes with each of these people. And my 5 minutes with each of them was really funny.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I kind of broke some rules because all the press people were looking at me funny and they weren't sure whether this was legit or not. Because obviously people had told them what Top Billing was, as a magazine show, and they'll ask you all the soft questions and like, what's your favorite thing about the movie?
What's your favorite color?
Yeah.
All the Ellen questions.
And I taught Snoop Dogg how to do like a South African version of the gangster handshake. And, you know, we talked about weed and a whole lot of stuff that was totally unrelated to the movie. Anyway, they used all of it in the show. I thought, wow, okay, good. This is going to be a new avenue of income for me. Well, all three of them, let me just think back. I'm going to give you the exact amount of money. I had to submit my taxi fare slips to them, which they then added to it. All together, including the transport from the hotel to the junkets and the fact that I'd done all this for them and everything else. Because what happens is that they don't have a cameraman there. They have the agency that does the press for them will send them the stuff.
Ah, smart.
Yeah. So they didn't even have to have a cameraman. They paid me R3,500, I think.
Taxi was what, 1.7?
Well, they added that to the 3,000-odd rand.
No, not worth it.
It's crazy, right? Jeez. So everybody thinks, but the point I'm getting to is that if you watch Top Billing, you're like, wow, those are the people who, they're earning the big money. They travel the world.
You think it's dripping in money.
Yeah, right. Sorry, guys, can I just stop you there? Why do we think that?
Because
they're not movie stars, they're presenters.
But presenting, that's the appearance.
Because on television in South Africa, that looks like the most glamorous job.
Yeah, but also think about it. Who's paying for this to happen? It's a network thing. It's not like Top Billing, sponsored by Qantas this week, is.
But see, people don't think that far, Ben. Yeah. People just see what they see and they just, oh, well, this looks like it's great. It's like if you watch a movie and you immediately imagine, well, that star must be paid a lot of money for this movie. But actually, they paid like 10% of what the special effects budget was. Most people don't know how the entertainment business works.
Yeah, okay.
And I thought about it. Those people who were hosting that show back in those days, they were big stars. People would stop them in the street and they would talk to them.
Miss South Africa was a rock star.
People who knew who Miss South Africa was. Like 20 years ago, she was the most famous woman in the country, which is why it was a big deal to be Miss South Africa. I don't know so much now. I mean, of course, there are exceptions, and people like Raleen and Demi Lee, Nell Peters, Tebow, they're big because they won an international competition as well.
Yeah.
But they're still not, you know, there were Miss South Africas that were, my God, I mean, they would go and do autograph sessions at a shopping mall. And there would be queues around the mall.
Yeah, but that was before internet, though.
So this is the latest news article on Michael Mole.
Yeah?
Firstly, they say presenter Michael Mole. Right. I'm sure I'd rather be called doctor.
Mm. Yeah, sure. And didn't he also do a doctor show at some point?
Yes, I think it was called Call Me Doctor.
Hello,
right,
doctor.
Okay,
hello.
Well, there we go.
Communication something doctor.
Right. I'm sure it was a good show because he's a presentable dude and he knows about medicine, so it would have been interesting.
This is December the 20th, last year.
All right.
I'm going to read you the whole article.
Oh, yeah. Is it long? Okay.
Presenter Michael Mole vacays in Turkey. Then there's a picture of him. The article starts. Top Billing presenter Michael Mole shared some beautiful photos from his time in the city of Istanbul, Turkey. He described his stay as awesome and memorable. I left a part of me in Istanbul. It's a chaotic, magnificent city.
That's it?
That's the whole article.
Oh.
Well, first of all, that also passes for journalism in 2019.
Did I fall asleep through the whole middle section of that?
But imagine how lazy you have to be as a journalist to just go and lift someone's pictures off Instagram and turn that into a news story.
Desperation.
Right?
Investigative journalism's been replaced by Instagram journalism.
Oh, Deborah Patter's shaking her head at the thought.
There's another name, Deborah Patter. When last did you see her around? I mean, she used to be the... She was like our Christiana Mampour for a while, wasn't she?
Doing work for American networks.
Absolutely.
So she might have diminished in our eyes, but she's somewhere elsewhere. Yeah. I had a friend who was recently set up on a blind date.
Yeah.
She arrived at the dinner and she realized she was being set up on a date with a former backstage actor. She just started texting
a former
me
backstage actor.
Oh, well, you see, backstage on ETV.
Well, that was a big show. That was a huge soap opera. You know, people put this stuff in their biographies on their social media, right? So they put their former Springbok rugby player, 1957 to 1968. Well, none of those guys are alive because they all die young because of the injuries. Oh. But they do. People put former Springbok rugby player, former Miss South Africa, former soap star, former television presenter.
One day I'm going to be a former Gareth Cliff Show person. I'm going to put that.
You know what, don't?
I think when I turn 60, that's going to be my crowning achievement.
Can we not do that?
No, but it'd be funny. I'll wait until I'm 60 to do it.
All right, yeah, what the hell, do it. But who do you think of when you think of like 10 years ago as famous people? I'd be interested to know who we think we've forgotten. Anyway, someone sent me a picture of the 10-year challenge. These two sandwiches with ham on them. And the one on the left-hand side has got a thin strip of ham in it, and then the one on the other on the next side is like a very floppy, the ham is sticking out. You get the basic idea.
What
That's
does
the
that
10-year challenge.
Big
flappy,
probably
loose
not
vagina.
Your area of interest here.
See, you've never seen a vagina.
It's not quite your thing.
I'm a gold star gay.
You're a gold star gay?
I was also a cesarean, so I've never been down there at all.
I heard there's something called a platinum star gay. They're the ones that weren't even born from a vagina.
Oh, yeah, that's
they were
me.
Born by cesarean.
So I've only kissed two girls in my life.
Oh, that's... you give,
and that was so, goodbye, though. Huh?
No, you're gold star, then. If you've never... If you're a man who's never, ever, ever touched vagina, either being born or at any other stage after that, and you've never been with a girl at all, even kissing, then you're a platinum
Damn
star
it.
Gay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. My ranking just went down.
Oh, if only you could go back in time.
You've ruined it, Sia. And you can never recoup
that.
You can never recoup your reputation.
And you can never upgrade, actually.
No.
So
my
sad.
Innocence.
I must be a platinum bisexual, then.
What? Ooh. What? Tell us more.
I don't know. What would qualify one as?
A platinum bisexual. No, what? So you've never done anything with a girl?
No, she has. That's why she would be bisexual.
Oh.
No.
I'm all ears.
I have a friend.
Over to you, Leanne Moore.
I have a straight friend who is absolutely obsessed with hearing about my stories of times with women.
Of course.
She loves it. I think she's living vicariously through me.
I was going to guess that.
Mm-hmm.
She needs excitement
there
elsewhere.
There are people who love that.
So please indulge her. Get to the story.
Anyway. All right. So lots to get into this morning. It's, of course, No Politics Friday, which we love. There's going to be no depressing nonsense about the useless sacks of shit that we refer to as our political leadership in South Africa from all angles. We're ignoring and avoiding that stuff today. It's what we do every Friday. And you can get hold of us. By the way, I said that we would be able to take your calls. We're trying to figure this out because what happened is, I'm going to give you a little bit of boring background here. Oh, that's what I wanted to get to. Sorry, just before we talk about the phones.
Okay.
So Johan Stemmert, Sia mentioned yesterday on the show. Johan Stemmert is quitting after how many years? Last night was his last show on Noot vir 'n Noot.
Oh, wow.
After 29 years.
Now that's someone who's been famous 10 years ago.
That's a guy who's famous now. Today. Yeah. If he did the 10-year challenge, you wouldn't know. It's like Rian Kreyvachen who's still working
on TV. He must know every song now, 29 years.
Definitely.
He must know them all.
But Johan Stemmert, who wore those colorful waistcoats and shirts, he's finally decided to step away from the spotlight. After all these years of being famous and doing television shows, it's enough. It's the longest-running show in South African history.
Even with Shazam.
He is our Simpsons. Even with Shazam, people watch it.
Mm. Wow, if Shazam don't pick him up for a big money deal at the moment. I mean,
the Afrikaans music industry will never be the same.
You know, the last time I watched Noot vir 'n Noot?
When?
30 years ago.
You watched the first episode and then you stopped?
Just about.
Shame, that's quite a gig. He started when he was 37 years old.
Oof. Okay.
And had the same job until now, 66 years old.
All right. That's 66? Is that how old he is now?
66 years old today.
I think he just said fuck. I heard. Now, women like those three that you just met now, Mahdi from Bloemfontein and Lorinda from Parais or whoever, this is the moment that they considered to be the highlight, I reckon, of their lives, let alone... Yeah.
It'll be their kid's wedding and the time we went to Noord for Noord.
Sure. And I love the fact that this show lasted as long as it did. They had that band that were there for years that used to play. Can you imagine how hard it is to say goodbye to a show like that that's been on for 29 years? It's just phenomenal. What an achievement. What a show. Noord for Noord. Congratulations to them. I'm serious. He's a guy who's really broken television records. You want to talk about successful shows in South Africa? That's one of them. Listen to that music. You can't beat that, right? Lisa, 50 rankies for you. 50 rankies for you. And they had sponsors. Like one, I think it was Absa Bank were there for like years. Hier's vir jou 50 randjies van Absa Bank.
Welkom by die 38ste aflewering van Noord vir Noord.
Yeah, there we go, you see.
I always
what are you going to do without that?
I always wish I understood the show.
What is that? You told me that that's where you learned most of your Afrikaans.
But I only could understand one word every three sentences. And then they would start singing. So I still couldn't really piece together what was happening.
I know Afrikaans people who couldn't understand what was happening on that show.
Thanks for making me feel better.
What, you had to guess the song? Is that how it worked?
I think so.
They would play like 2 seconds of a song and you have to guess what it was.
And that's how I remember
and
it.
And they'd have guest artists who would come on and like sing a medley and you'd have to name as many songs as you could that were in the medley. I honestly can't remember. It's been a long, long time. I frankly didn't even know that it was still on TV, but...
I would love to see the ratings as well.
Well done to them.
It means it was consistent.
Oh, big time. No, they got good ratings.
44 commission seasons.
Yeah.
44.
That's phenomenal. So as I was saying, the phones, there's a lot of people are very frustrated. They've been trying to call us this week, and we've had no way of connecting the phones up. We had a system where the phone would go through to the producer, and the producer would answer the calls and put them through to me. And I suddenly thought the other day, you know, when we were on commercial radio, we used to just take calls live.
Mm.
And we'd take our chances. And if people, you know, get on there and they'd swear or they'd say something outrageous, or we'd handle it. Because it's more exciting that way. You never know what you're going to get. And I really want to do that again. So we're trying to connect up the phones directly into the studio. You wouldn't believe how complicated this is. There's a certain cable we need, and then we need to talk to the service provider. And,
it's not a Wi-Fi thing.
No, and you also wouldn't believe. I mean, you ask them to come and fix your phone at home, and it's easy. They plug a phone in, and they test the line, and then it works. Well, here, I mean, we have to get Jesus on a cloud to come down, and he has to find the cable himself, and then the saints all have to line up, and then the angels sing a chorus, and Bill Gates and Steve Jobs comes up from the dead and he has to help. And you've never seen such a complicated thing just to get a phone line working. But we will have it going, I assure you, even if I have to connect it by soldering the wires together myself.
That's quite
I cannot
a lot of
wait.
Commitment.
I cannot wait to take live calls again. It just struck me as so bizarre. Here we are. We come to like uncensored internet radio, and we get to do podcasts, and you know the live element of it is exciting to me. That's why we get here in the morning at 6 o'clock, and then I used to take live calls on radio, but I don't take them here. That's insane. Why would I screen the calls here? Sometimes you're really stupid and you don't think things through. I'm stupid. Clearly, I need my head read. Right? What a dummy.
Well, maybe we were quiet because we all agree.
Yes, of course.
Hey.
I'd be worried if you didn't agree. I'm a moron. So from Monday on, hopefully Monday, I'm crossing my fingers, holding my thumbs, and praying to everyone, Allah, and Siddhartha Gautama, and everybody.
Which is the god of phones? I don't think it's Allah.
Telephonius.
That's right. Oh. I'm just going to go with that. That sounds good to me.
What's the backstory to Telephonius?
All right. Someone says, Gareth, you seem to have started a lip-smacking, lip-pursing thing, and sometimes you add a click of your fingers. Did you have cocaine for breakfast? Carl. No, I know. I did that when I was talking about the story in Los Angeles. I don't know why. Maybe it's a way I'm trying to remember stuff. I'm like trying to suck
what
the information
out of
my head. I did like a... Or whatever.
It wasn't the same sign as your brother on the cruise ship, Leanne.
Yeah. Carl, I'm so flattered that you listen to every bodily noise that comes out of me. You should seriously think about what you're spending your time
doing. Sorry. That's for you, Carl. Eat that.
You're worried about me. All right, let's take a look at some of the stories in the news this morning.
What a lady.
The cop, speaking of drugs and so on, the cops have found 2.6 million rand hidden in ice cream containers and rubbish bags. Wow, 2.6 million rand in cash.
Where did they find it?
Two cash and transit security guards have been arrested. Police recovered more than 2 million allegedly stolen from a company in Louis Trichardt. They recovered the cash from three separate locations following a tip-off. The money was hidden in ice cream containers and rubbish bags. More cash was found underground. They recovered it, and Brigadier Mutlafela Mujapelo said, "The operation, which commenced yesterday afternoon, proceeded through the night until this morning, was characterized by relentless searches, probing and digging by the members at three different premises. It produced positive results, and the cash was recovered buried in yards. Some of the cash was found stashed in ice cream containers. The total amount was 2.6 million. Suspects are expected to appear in court soon." Now, what happens to that money? What happens to 2.6 million that the cops recover? Where does it go?
There must be, where all of these funds go? Like in P, that big cocaine?
Yeah, that's...
What happens to that cocaine?
Don't know. But it should go to the... In this case, because there's this company that was robbed in Louis Trichardt, it should surely go back to that company, right? Mm. So let me just give it to them. In the cocaine one, I think they take the drugs, but then if there's any cash found...
Take them.
Yeah, well,
it's a whole boat. It's a boat of drugs.
Yeah, I don't know what they do with that, but imagine digging around in someone's yard and you find 2.6 million rand in ice cream containers. Yes,
it's quite hard to hide that amount of cash.
That's a lot of digging. Yeah.
Brazil may drop visas for the US, Australia, and Japan. Now, there's a lot going on in Brazil at the moment. They're going to try and boost. Please listen, government. We promised you no politics Friday, but if government are listening, because they tend not to pay attention to anything but their own noises, then this is a great idea. You know, there's this new Bolsonaro guy who's in charge in Brazil. They're going to drop visas for countries like the US, Australia, Canada, and Japan. Why? To boost tourism. The tourism minister there, Alvaro Antonio, said that the measure could be adopted soon with the aim of tripling annual revenues from foreign tourists to 18 billion, the newspaper O Globo reported. Currently, Brazil applies reciprocal visa measures against countries. We do that too. So we make it so hard for people to visit here. I know someone who, they went to the airport, they booked their tickets, they were on their way, they had a little kid, they didn't have the full birth certificate thing, which you now need to show, thanks to that idiot, Malusi Gigaba, with the dick pics, remember him? And they had to stop at the airport, they had to go back home, and they had to get this birth certificate and book a different flight. Now, what a waste of money. And what a waste of time. For what? It's outrageous.
There's bigger things to worry about.
And we have needs in our tourism industry. We are down on what we should be at in terms of goals and targets and the number of people who want to come to this country. We've just made it so hard for them. It's completely bizarre. So there's Brazil leading the way. Also because they instead of having some left-wing lunatic who's corrupt as all hell, they've now got some right-wing lunatic in there. But at least he knows how to get the business going. Prince Philip had a crash. Did you hear about this?
Oh, what was he? Was he driving?
Out of bed in a vehicle.
He was in a vehicle in one of the Land Rovers near Sandringham. He's 97 years old. Now, a lot of people. In fact, I'm going to get Tyron. He's here. He's here for the Auto Central show. He's busy preparing for Monday. They're all getting things ready. But Tyron's here. Tyron, how old should someone be when they are not allowed to drive anymore? Because Prince Philip is 97, and there's no way that this guy should be allowed on the roads. The Land Rover was found turned over on its side.
I think if you're capable of driving at 97, then you should be allowed to drive. Like, why take that away from somebody? If your eyes work and your ears work, why not? I think it's cool that
the
Queen's hubby crashed his Rangey.
Well, apparently he crashed the thing. It was on its side, and he got out and walked away. He just walked back to the estate.
What do you think he said? I mean, he's... I think you should
actually have to go and redo your license when you reach a certain age, just to make sure that you're competent.
What do you think that age is?
I don't know. You should probably do it every 10 years from when you hit maybe 70. I don't know.
Every 5 years, because let's be honest, when you get to 70, life speeds up a lot. Your time is numbered. I saw a guy, he must have been 87, driving past my house the other day. He was holding onto the steering wheel like it was about to fall off, and he was driving along a cliff face, and it was a small road. The backup of traffic behind him, mm-hmm. just huge. So he gets, I mean, like, who's more of a risk, me drunk or that guy?
No, that guy.
Well, there are a lot of incompetent drivers, so I don't know. Maybe we should all do our licenses more than once, huh?
Also, in this country, you can't have these high-level conversations.
While I've got you there, I know it's no politics Friday, but Bladen's and Monday admitted yesterday that we've got a backlog of hundreds of thousands of driver's license cards. Hundreds of thousands.
One of them's mine.
Really? You're waiting for it still? I guess you guys will be talking about this on Monday.
Systems and processes, shocking. But anyway, we'll get onto that on Monday.
Don't you think it's easier to just be an illegal driver and pay the fines?
Probably is.
Because if you try to comply with the law, it's so goddamned hard. It's like ETOLS.
It took me 3 hours to renew my license, and they said collected in 6 weeks, and it's still not ready. That was 3 months ago.
Yeah, you see, you're trying to comply. You're trying to be a good citizen, and they nail you.
Yeah.
Do you have something on? Do you have a receipt that says you're waiting your license?
Or a temporary license.
What happens
right now? Yeah, so I've got my temporary license, and that's been stamped. It's got a date stamp on it, so I've got that. But
what a pain! That's
come back next week.
Yeah, and then now, by the way, if you go to renew your driver's license, you need to make an appointment online.
Yeah, I've got mine coming up.
You talked about it. 7th of July, 2027.
Mm-hmm.
That's where she got her first time.
But you see, here she is. She's trying to comply. Here's Tyron. He's trying to comply. Yeah, you can only... People will stop obeying the law eventually when it becomes too hard to comply with the law. And this is just human behavior. No one's going to... You'll just pay the fine eventually.
I don't mind taking the 3 hours out of my day to go and get the license done, but then deliver it to me, or let me come and when you tell me you come and collect it in 6 weeks, then make sure it's ready.
Yeah, I mean, it's the least. You're paying for it after all.
Absolutely.
And you're paying for the useless department that's supposed to hand these things out.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Anyway, we're not going to go down that road.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tyron. There we go. Aren't you lucky to have him here on call to just give us some thoughts on old people driving? So, Prince Philip was involved in a road traffic accident with another vehicle. He was not injured. The accident took place close to Sandringham Estate. Local police attended the scene. The BBC reported that Philip was driving a Range Rover and the vehicle landed on its side after a collision. It quoted a witness as saying the Duke was very shaken. A police spokeswoman later confirmed that he was at the wheel and he was checked by a doctor afterwards. He did not go to hospital and was back at Sandringham.
Bloody stupid car.
he probably got out, dusted himself off and said, well, someone will pick with that up. And then he walked away.
Where was he going? I mean, what does he have to do?
Well, he went to pick up a sheep for the spit or something. I don't know.
97.
So someone says here, why does Prince Philip, who's married to the Queen, have to drive a car on his own? Surely he needs to have bodyguards and drivers. Well, no, it's like they're on their home farm. It's like, if you own a farm, if you're a farmer, you don't have someone drive you around on your own farm. He was probably checking on the stud farm or going to the little shop. He does these things. He's an ordinary old dude.
He also does what he likes.
No, of course he does. And you're not going to stop a guy like that from driving around.
And with that said, what happened for you to be in this accident? It's not like it's a busy intersection with tons of cars.
Yeah, he must have been going fast. Or he must have. Maybe he just blacked out and smashed into it.
He fell asleep for a while.
Which further proves our case of saying old people shouldn't be driving.
And then just quickly, Meghan and Harry's baby may not be called His Royal Highness or Her Royal Highness.
Ooh.
Yeah, here's the first bit of discrimination. There's going to be more. Royal enthusiasts are counting down the week. Oh, please, Sia's the biggest enthusiast here. Sia's so excited about this kid. The weeks to the birth of Prince Harry and Meghan's first child. Speculation mounting over whether the royal baby will be given an HRH. The Daily Mail reports the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have not been given permission by the Queen for their child to be styled as His or Her Royal Highness.
Sounds so childish. His Royal Highness. You also make poos. You also vomit off too much Sambuca.
That is kind of
scary. Get off your high
but
horse.
But it also sounds very fabulous.
Tributes have started pouring in for anti-apartheid activist Hugh Lewin. Friends and colleagues have sent condolences to the family of the late anti-apartheid activist. The acclaimed author passed away at his home in Johannesburg on Wednesday after a long illness. He was 79. Was incarcerated for 7 years in the 1960s after being found guilty of sabotage activities against the apartheid government. After his release in 1971, he left the country and spent 10 years in exile in London, followed by 10 years in Zimbabwe. His former colleague at the Institute for the Advancement of Journalism, Amina Francis, said, "He leaves a rich legacy in terms of giving guidance and direction over our training mandate. When he left the IAJ, he continued with his writing, blah, 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 blah." So there he goes. All right. There we are. There's some useful information for you this morning. All that you need to know to get your Friday underway. And if you know a 97-year-old, please don't let them drive. Because we've learned from Prince Philip, who's in remarkably good condition, but still, he's 97 years old.
I can even feel the difference between now and 10 years ago in my driving.
Yeah?
I tend to look more left and right when I'm crossing a road. I almost don't trust myself.
Oh.
Whereas before, I would just left, right, go.
Yeah.
So can you imagine what difference 5 years would make between the ages of 70 and 75?
But especially when, as Ben says, things get a little bit faster towards the end of your life. You're like,
and you get slower.
In your 90s, year by year, you're becoming, you know, less and less capable of just keeping it together physically, let alone mentally. So there we go. Lots to think about. It's get to Ben in the sport. By the way, Bitcoin at $3,666 and Ethereum at $123. Ben, what do you have for us?
Well, Earl Rose is probably going to steal your clubs if you let him. The Aussie Open, the Qatar 2022 World Cup might be more bloated than expected. And your big fixtures for the weekend. Big story from yesterday, and I say big story because, well, the former rugby player Earl Rose has been spotted. I know if you're going to be responsible as a journalist, you're going to say ex so-and-so rugby player, but let's be honest. I mean, it's him. It's him. Everyone's saying it's Earl Rose on the camera footage stealing golf clubs in Stellenbosch Golf Course.
So who did Earl Rose play for?
Well, he played for the Western Province, the Lions. He played with Super Rugby as well.
Yeah. How long ago?
A few years ago, not too. I mean, he's 35.
So he's not old.
He's not old. Okay, he's 35.
Stealing people's clubs?
Peter de Villiers put him into a box squad. He never played for the box. So please, for the love of anything holy, stop calling him ex-Springbok because it makes all the other Springboks just sound tarnished. So ex-rugby player Earl Rose has been spotted on video surveillance footage from Stellenbosch Golf Course walking up to someone's golf bag with some skellamochi, and then they literally steal steal some guy's driver and some guy's putter, take the head covers off to obscure them in the bag. They walk out, and that's it.
Jesus. They're stealing golf clubs.
How low? How low?
I mean, that's horrendous.
And then if you go into Earl Rose's Facebook account, you'll see two of the groups that he's actually joined or participates in is secondhand golf club sales, swapping of merchandise, that kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
So they steal the stuff and then they sell it.
But then, apparently, the story gets weirder. He then goes back to the club the next day to return just the head of the driver, because like with these new clubs, you can detach the shaft from the head, because that's how you personalize it. And apparently, he went back to the golf club and returned just the head and said, "Sorry, I've just found this. Can I return it to lost and found?" And the security guard's like, "Hang on a second. I'm pretty sure you're the same dipshit that was here yesterday stealing this club." And he's like, wow. So they say, well,
so he's not only a thief, but he's a dumb thief.
He's just a piece of shit. So now the security guard's like, well, if you want to return to Lost and Found, you want to go into the clubhouse. And he's like, no, I'm just going to leave it here with you. Bye. Gone.
Wow.
And that's all we've heard about this story. Of course, it's now police matter, so the golf course itself isn't really speaking about it. But obviously, the guy whose clubs were stolen were naturally very pissed off. They thought they were being pranked by some mates of theirs. You know, they then reported to the club. They then got onto the video footage. And it's Earl Rose. I mean, everyone says Earl Rose.
Ben, I've never been a member of a golf club, but I would imagine there's like a code of honor. You don't go and open someone else's locker.
That's basic stuff. Really.
You don't steal someone else's golf balls.
No, of course you don't.
About your score.
No, you don't take chips off someone's lunch plate. It's just basic life, yeah, really.
Right.
But to walk up to someone's golf bag, like the guy literally, he got there, he was signing in, paying his green fees, was about to go play. In that moment of leaving his bag unattended in a passage, which you never think about, Earl and his female accomplice, who apparently isn't his wife because his wife adamantly says that she's currently in Namibia.
Wow.
Dreadful people. But then again, kids, this is what happens when you're not quite good enough to make an international rugby player and you're at a certain level. The money isn't overly good. So when the career finishes and you've got nothing to really fall back on, you have no overseas contracts that you'd be able to milk the cash from, you're left the position where you might need to steal golf clubs to make dinner. So let that be a cautionary tale of Earl Rose and the state of players who just are that lower level of income when it comes to sport. When you've got no way of making revenue after your career, you might be stealing golf clubs.
You know, I love Ben's sport for things like this. He leads with this story, which is really about petty theft. Where else would you hear this? The rest, do you think they're going to show this on Supersport or the sports headline on the back page of any major newspaper? Hell no.
People keep saying X Springbok steals golf club. Like, stop calling X Springbok because you haven't. If you've basically said X Springbok, means that you've committed to saying who this person is without saying their name. So you just might as well say the name. See the point there?
Gotcha.
Stop calling him X Springbok. He did not ever sing the anthem and do his country proud in a jersey with anything. The guy used to wear 73 pairs of shoulder pads, every piece of padding you can get, and now he steals golf clubs. So I guess you can say Australia's version of Earl Rose, Kirtley Beale, although this guy actually was talented and did play a lot of international rugby, but this guy's an absolute mess. He was forced to apologize for a video that surfaced recently from a couple of years back of him laughing about some guy who looked to be snorting cocaine. And now there's another video that's come out this week where he's apparently taking the vacuum cleaner, trying to play it like a didgeridoo, and in the background there looks to be white powder cut into lines all over a plate. Kirtley Beale, this guy's a train wreck. But then again, he is actually Australian sport because all those Julios got into Australian cricket, now look where it is. And then all these Bogans got into Australian rugby, and look where that is. Culture, people. Culture, that's what happens. You let a couple of bad apples in, and then suddenly it all goes to shit. So this guy's an absolute train wreck. All the talent in the world, but just doesn't know how to behave. Australian rugby is actually currently looking for him at the moment. He's alleged to be somewhere in New Zealand. Speaking about the Australasian land place, Aussie Open's currently on. No major surprises as far as big seeds being toppled. Serena Williams smashed Eugenie Bouchard yesterday, 6-2, 6-2. That makes the headlines because, well, obviously, you know, Serena and Eugenie Bouchard is really attractive. Dominic Thiem was probably the only big male seed to fall. He retired hurt. Of course, Kevin Anderson, he fell out in the second round as well. But if you were to fall out of the second round of the Aussie Open, how much do you think you earn? Open this up to the table here.
I don't know. Like, maybe $5,000.
Anyone else?
It's 10. Yeah. 10,000.
I'll say 8.
$105,000 is what you will earn if you get trousered in the second round.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of money.
It is. For coming somewhere last.
First round, anybody?
No, that's probably nothing.
First round, if you get to the Aussie Open, you shake hands with Novak Djokovic and he beats you 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, you make 75,000 rand.
Oh, that's not bad.
And that's for the women's is too, because, you know, equal pay, equal opportunity.
Okay.
That's ridiculous.
The women's is as well.
How good's that? Like, if you play your balls off in a golf tournament and you win it, and I'm talking here on tours around the world, gee, you'd be pretty stoked with 105,000 rand. Dollars, sorry. Third round, 155. Fourth round, 260. Quarterfinals, you're getting close to half a million, $460,000. Right. You get to the semifinals, you're making $920,000. If you get into the final and you lose, $2.1 million. Jeez. And if you win, $4.1 million. No wonder Roger Federer won't go home to his kids and his wife.
No wonder that these guys cry when they don't make it through.
Yeah, just keep making money. Keep making the money. I would do exactly the same, Roger. That was not a dig at you, not the slightest. You're a nice guy, unlike all right. This weekend, you get to see football, which is basically what happens every single weekend. We'll start with the ABSA Premiership. This doesn't excite me. I'm sorry. There are so many great things in football, but this ABSA Premiership just doesn't ever really ignite the senses until it gets down to the business end when ultimately Sundowns come back because they've got 73 games in hand. So let's rather go to the English Premier League, right? Because that's easier to work out. You've got Liverpool and you've got Man City. Those are the top two teams. There's so much emotion. There's so much stuff happening there. You've got Man United, who are resurgent. You've got Arsenal, who ultimately will disappoint you, as will Spurs. And then the rest, well, they've just got nice names. Like Wolverhampton Wanderers. They'll play Leicester City. 2:30 on Saturday, your first game there. Liverpool will be taking on Crystal Palace at home at 5. And then Man United are taking on Brighton and Hove Albion, also at 5. So there we go. It's straight away, Saturday. A lot of good fixtures. Newcastle United, you know, they're always skirting with relegation. And you always hear people talking about the Toon Army. Well, those are their fans. They'll take on Cardiff City at 5 as well. Other big games to look out for on Saturday, Arsenal versus Chelsea. Now, Chelsea still believe they're in the title hunt. Arsenal know better, of course. They know they're not in this. But they would like to somehow sneak a top four position to get back into the big Champions League. That's not going to happen either. Either way, 7:30, that game. Big London derby. Right. Then on the Sunday, you got Fulham versus Spurs. But now the Spurs without Harry Kane. Also, but prior to that, at 3:30, Huddersfield will take on the Man City, who I still think will go ahead and win this entire league. So that is what you've got to look forward to. Other football news is that FIFA are talking about making the Qatar World Cup of 2022 a 48-team tournament. Qatar physically can't have 48 football teams in Qatar because there's not enough space.
Really?
Physically.
they're hosting the World Cup.
Yeah. But the World Cup to this point has been 32 sides, right? Oh. You want to have 48 teams?
Is there not enough space in the
country? There's not enough space. Basically, you're going to have 17 games a day on the same field. Which I'm exaggerating, obviously, yeah, obviously. But it's just silly. But now, obviously, the Qatar authorities are going, yeah, cool, bring us everything. But, you know, there's been a massive political crisis in that area. Everyone's ostracized.
Qatar's been cut off.
Qatar's been cut off. And they can't host 48 teams. Blow it out your ass, Gianni Infantino. Come on, guys. Let's get back to some common sense with this whole World Cup thing. We want to see the best teams in the world. I don't want to see some team who has a bunch of tryhards who are going to get absolutely knocked out in the first possible time to be knocked out. It's the best of the best. Let's just stop with the bullshit, please. Mm-hmm. If Qatar is going to have 48 teams, they're going to have to tie in surrounding areas. Problem is, the surrounding areas don't like them. I'm not even like a geography student. I'm not a political analyst. I'm just a guy who talks about sport, and I'll work that out for you, Gianni, in 3.7 seconds. So get your head out of your ass and try to do something decent. Why don't you give Africa more of a chance? Try to get some money into development football here. Do something of worth. Damn you.
All right.
2026, although, is where 48 teams really could play because you've got Mexico, you've got the USA, and you've got Canada. Again, going back to basic geography, much bigger landmass, Gareth, than Qatar.
That's right.
And finally, there'll be cricket this weekend. Yes, the Proteas on Saturday will be taking on the Pakistan in the ODI format, and that will be in PE. Now, PE, nothing's happened there since that massive drug bust, so this is a good time to get out there and get out of the house. Very, very good. And that is your sport for the weekend.
All right, very good. Thank you, Ben. That's a terrific way to start your weekend. We got Said by Sia next. I saw that they finally exposed the guy who's behind the Advocate Barry Roo Twitter account. Turns out he's a Zambian dude. There's a guy called Tso Chilala. He's 27 years old. He's Zambian. He's from the small town of Monze, southwest of Lusaka, and he's the person behind the Advocate Barry Roo account.
Jeez, wouldn't have guessed that.
He's not even South African, not that that matters, but he's very much involved in commenting on a lot of South African politics. Apparently what he did, he inadvertently flipped the camera to selfie mode while he was doing a video or while he was doing a live stream or something, and then people identified him, and now we know who he is. And it turns out that he's this nobody. People were saying, oh, he's got this inside info, maybe he works for crime intelligence, maybe he's sponsored by one of the big political parties, but it turns out he's just a nobody. He's just some dude who's been involved in a lot of news stories, and you know, he kind of throws out information here and there, but he has no special links to anyone important. He's got like a bunch of fake accounts. This is the thing that bothers me about social media too, is that you can be anonymous, but you'll eventually be caught out because there's always a digital trail. You know, you leave your footprints. And I also think that if you're going to say things, you're going to be controversial like this account, Advocate Barry Roux, was for the longest time. I even followed him for a while. I stopped eventually because it became ridiculous. But if you're going to be that kind of influencer, in inverted commas, you need to be who you are. I mean, there needs to be some real-world responsibility for what you're putting on social media, because that virtual world has as much impact these days as the real one does. So, interestingly enough, they've caught him, they know who he is, and we know that he's based in Pretoria. We know that he has been talking as if he could vote in the elections, but he's not, because he's not a national. He's not a South African national. He's not even, I don't even know if he's a legal resident. But there we are. Advocate Barry Roux. Yeah.
Who'd have thunk?
And I guess on the other side of the scale, he started out as no one. You know, yeah. We didn't know his name.
Correct.
But I guess through his online presence as well, he's been able to build these connections and whatnot, because he has now become a source, and I know of people who've now DM'd him screenshots of saucy things, or they said, oh no, I saw this one and this one doing this in the shadows, you know, like...
Well, as Mandy Wiener says, because the tweets originate from an anonymous account, it leaves the people at the receiving end of his tweets with no recourse if it's false information. There's no press ombud or news editor to contact if the information is untrue. And this is precisely why she says the story is important. So we've got to unmask all these anonymous people on social media. If they want to be part of the conversation, we need to be able to know who they are. Otherwise, what weight does your story carry?
Hold up.
You're being a bully, basically.
Plot twist.
An anonymous bully.
Doesn't this also allow for people he's exposed
to sue him now? To go after him? Yeah, he's going to be in some trouble.
Because he was one of the first, if not the first, who released the Gigaba video.
That's right. So here we are.
Snap.
So this guy, don't expect too much noise from that account anymore. And if you have been following him because he spreads this to his followers... Remember, you can be jointly and severally attached to what this guy does. So get the hell out of there as quickly as you can. All right. So, Sia, what do you got for us in Said by Sia this morning? Do you want to inspire us, give us some good news on a Friday morning? Of course you do. That's what you do. Take it away, Sia Sangweni.
Here's some inspiration of a different kind. I guess with the beginning of the year, we all have New Year's resolutions, and mostly a lot of us will say we want to read more. Well, I've looked at a list of some successful people who have written about the books that have changed their lives. So these are some CEOs, some famous actors who say because of these books, they've been better.
Oh, is this off Oprah's reading list?
No, it's not from Oprah's book lover. I could have just printed that out would have been enough. But Bill Gates, we now know that year after year he releases a list himself. Mm-hmm. But this is a book he calls the most inspiring book he's ever read. And that is one called, make your notes now, The Better Angels of Our Nature. It's written by Steven Pinker. And he aims this at new graduates. He said it was published in 2011 and says the book asserts that violence has declined across times, and it shows how the world is getting better. And Bill Gates advocates this book even more, explaining it as a book saying that it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean you ignore the serious problems we face, but rather it means you believe they can be solved. So that's quite interesting. John Legend cites Let the Trumpet Sound, a book by Stephen B. Oates, which was written about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as a book that changed his life. He says that I started developing a social conscience when I would read biographies about people like Dr. King and and other leaders who put themselves on the line to make big change happen. So the book was written in 1982, and it's a biography that details Martin Luther King Jr.'s childhood and how his Southern upbringing inspired him to become this figure that we now know from the civil rights movement. Actress Leah Remini cites Hardwiring Happiness as a book that changed her life. It's a book that she says she got plenty of tools to use from, and it's a self-help book that shows readers how to cultivate the likes of happiness, love, peace, and confidence by following simple brain exercises. Warren Buffett is actually a big-time reader. He mm-hmm. cites a book called The Intelligent Investor as a book that changed his life. It's actually written in 1949, and it's a business book. And he says that the book preaches of the value of investing or buying stocks when they are really low and holding on for them for a very long time. And he says, I just happened to pick up that book up at a bookstore in Nebraska. And look, I mean, if it's a book about investing, and look at where Warren Buffett is, I think we should pay attention to that. And then finally, the current CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, cites a book called Mindset, The New Psychology of Success by Carol Dweck as a book that changed his life. Satya says that it was actually his wife who suggested the book to him and ended up changing his outlook forever. And in a recent interview, he explained that mindset is about fixed mindset versus growth mindset. So when you have a growth mindset, you're always willing to learn. And he says that he started thinking about what was happening in his head and asked whether, as a company, he has a learning culture. And he asked his company, do we have enough curiosity? And the big takeaway that he took from this was the learn-it-all will yeah. always do better than the know-it-all. So isn't that interesting?
That's a good point. But I find when you ask people, what book are you reading, they choose a book that they think will impress you.
Yeah.
They don't really tell you what they're reading. Like, they may be reading some fictional nonsense.
Yeah, but like Harry Potter porn.
And
something.
But whenever you ask them, they're like, oh no, I'm reading this amazing self-help book by X, Y, and Z, or I'm reading about the fourth digital revolution. Oh. No one's telling the truth when you ask them about what book they're actually reading.
They're reading a Daniel Steele novel.
Probably. Mm. If they're reading it all. You know, yeah. The funniest thing of all this is that you ask some people who you know don't read, because you can tell from their writing they can't spell, and you say to them, what are you reading? And then they tell you they're reading like Eckhart Tolle, or they're reading some famous classical novel, and you're like, there's no way you're reading that. You can't even write.
Sure.
There's no way. You ask some people, what are you reading? And they give you this laundry list of 20 of the most famous books. You know, they've gone on the internet to look up
just to find
20
the title.
Of the most yes. influential books of the 21st century or whatever it is. And you know they haven't read one of those books.
Well, I brought this up this morning because that's one of the challenges. I know I seem like one of those corny people every single
year. For all we know,
year.
Bill Gates is reading like softcore porn.
50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
But I'm actually trying to do that this year. I looked at a list of some inspiring books, and one of those was a book by Marion Williamson, and I have to say I got it over Christmas and I still haven't been able to fully wrap my head around it. So let's see.
All right.
Every single month trying to get at least one book out of the way.
I like it, Sia.
What
let's
are you
make
reading
it
right now?
I'm reading a book called A Genius. I've been reading it for a little while now.
Liar.
No, I promise you. It's a book about... Ironically, it fits into this discussion because it's a book about stuff that people say they understand that they don't, like dark matter and quantum physics and things like that. And it explains these concepts, and then it tests you to see whether you actually understand what the hell it is, because a lot of people say, oh, I know what that is, and they bring it up in conversation like they actually know what they're talking about. Uh-huh. So I didn't want to be caught with my pants down if anyone ever asks me about that stuff and I don't know what it is.
Like nuclear weapons.
And I mean, I'm pleased, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to admit when I don't know the first thing about something. If I don't know about anything, I'm the first guy to ask. In fact, I ask questions. And if it's someone who knows what they're talking about, then I listen. But that's what you've got to know, is whether or not they know what they're talking about. Mm. Otherwise, you're wasting your time listening. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, that's what I'm reading, since you asked. And you notice I didn't have to think about that for a whole long time because it's on my bedside table. I'm only on page 12, but I'm making my way.
Yeah. I need to get some books.
No. All right, let's get cracking. It's Friday morning, cliffcentral.com. Hello. Hello to you.
This is CliffCentral.com.